Blog Talk Radio.
Ray and Tay today. Yes, Sports Radio's on. Talking sports with friends, and you know we got it on. From the NFL to the NBA, MLB and college hoops do it all day. College football, we know who's number one. Understand, on the phones, you know we get it done. So call in 718-664-9098 and we'll give you more. Talking sports.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Come on and join the ride. It's a Friday, 718-664-9098. We're taking your calls. We're talking some sports. Hit us up with your emails from NBA, the NFL free agency, college hoops, Syracuse, at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Tweet at us, Facebook us, YouTube us. You know, Facebook us. We're everywhere. Check out our website, rayandtaytoday.com. Ray, I say to you, as we're talking about NFL free agency, J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. What do you think? Fifth round pick for Brandon Marshall. I like it.
Hey, I love it for the Jets. He's due $7.5 million this year, but that's
not much
nothing.
At all. That's nothing.
Yeah, they're going to get rid of Percy Harvin.
Yeah.
So, ultimately, they're going to have Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall as their wide receivers. Now, shout out to Tracy Thomas, who I played my catcher in softball, and she wrote, Decker and Marshall are going to throw the ball to each other because they don't have a quarterback. I thought that was hilarious.
Well, wait a minute. I know. It's hard. But think of this, right? They still have that sixth pick, and they still have over $40 million in cap space. So they're in the
top.
But
there's no quarterbacks out there, though. That's the problem. Who are they going to get? Brian Hoyer?
Okay, wait. Maybe you trade for Glennon. Maybe Hoyer. Maybe they get Cutler. Or maybe it's Mariota. Or Nick Foles. I think they're going to get Nick Foles because I'm telling you, as we talk about this trade, the big trade of the week was Shady and Chip Kelly going crazy. The whole Eagles roster is stripped. No Trent Cole, no Kerry Williams. He's meeting with the Seahawks. They trade Shady for Kiko Alonso coming off the ACL or off the Achilles. And we'll see how that plays out because, remember, in Buffalo, Kiko Alonso had a great defensive line, so he never got touched. Not so great in Philly. Chip's got to rebuild that defense. What'd you think about the Shady deal?
I thought it was real shady because Kiko Alonso's coming off missing a whole year. So even though this guy is great, and shout out to all you Oregon Ducks out there and Duck Nation representing, but I don't know how he'll come back next year. But I do know that Shady McCoy is the number one or number two most dynamic player in the whole league. So,
and he's just turning 27 this season. He's
is
so
Chip
young.
Kelly so arrogant to think, I mean, do we have another Mike Shanahan on our hands to think that anybody in my system can go for 1,500 yards? Remember when he traded Clinton Portis for Champ Bailey? Turns out Champ Bailey's a Hall of Famer, so that's a decent trade. But the whole notion was, in my zone blocking scheme in Denver, Mike Shanahan was saying, I can put anybody back there and run for 1,000 yards. So,
and he kind of did. Give him credit.
He did. He could get 1,000, but you can't get 1,500. You can't get 1,800. LeSean McCoy is special. Shady is a special, special athlete that doesn't come along that often. Somebody that can affect the game in the passing and in the running game. So to
two
me,
things, though.
I don't do that trade if I'm
okay,
the
but two things. To be fair, he dances left to right. He's not north and south. And also, a couple things. He got less carries with Sproles being there. And then you got to consider that cap hit that he was making. He was going to be the second highest back behind Peterson in terms of money. They figure, hey, I can get me another corner, maybe go after Byron Maxwell, maybe sign C.J. Spiller or pick up Pierre Thomas or get a couple of backs, draft one, in the second, third round. Maybe he gets Jay Ayala from Boise State or Amir Abdullah, and away we go. So I don't know. Chip might be, I threw it out there on Twitter. Is he the the sort of mad scientist, the evil genius, or is he just the egomaniac who's like stubbing his, you know, toe, you know, stubbing his foot? So we'll see how it plays out, but let's wait to after a week or two of free agency to see what the Eagles scoop up. Now, we say goodbye in Indianapolis to a legend, Reggie Wayne. The Colts are letting him go. You know how we both respect the heck out of Reggie Wayne, but I think it was time. You hope he retires. You don't want to see him in another jersey. So what do you think about that?
I still think he can play, though. I mean,
really? He can't get open. You saw him in the Patriots game in the playoffs.
Well,
I don't
maybe
think
that's against the Patriots in a Belichick defense with some
really?
You know, superior corners.
I think he hit that wall, Ray.
Really?
Think
you think that Reggie Wayne can't go and be a third receiver somewhere and move the chains? He can't go back with Peyton Manning
in
Denver?
Okay, you
want to
put him in the slot? Is Wes
Welker?
Yeah, sure. Is Wes Welker done?
He's still Reggie Wayne.
Did Wes Welker hit a wall?
I think Wes Welker hit a wall. I think also Wes Welker had, what is it, four straight years of over 100 carries. He had those concussions. He had the, you know, all the off-field, you know, substance issues. Wes Welker's done. Done being elite, right? Now, the good thing is for Wes Welker is you can be a 45, 50 catch slot receiver, you know, a la Cole Beasley, who just got re-signed by the Cowboys.
4 years.
You can still contribute. You can still contribute, but you're not going to be the chain mover that he was in New England and even 2 years ago in Denver.
So let me ask you this, because this is interesting how all this is going to play out. Number one, we already said that Sue's the big free agent. 12 o'clock tomorrow, they can start negotiating. Everything's official Tuesday, 4 p.m. Monday, we will give you all the updated moves, stuff like that. There's already been a lot of stuff. Marcus Colston re-signed with the Saints. Niles Paul resigned with the Redskins. Jacoby Jones is going to go to the Chargers because some guys who have already been cut can, you know, resign or sign with teams already. So like Darnell Dockett, the Cardinals say goodbye to him. He goes with the Niners, which actually I think quietly, Ray, is a very good move. What happens to Vince Wilfork? Does he go back to the Patriots or is he going to Green Bay? Is he just gone? A Patriot legend.
I think they find a way to bring him back. He's such a unique player that he fits that system. He knows Belichick. He knows how to play in that defense. They can build around him. He always takes up space in the middle. I think they find a way. There have been a lot of Vince Wilfork noise for the last 2-3 years, but they always seem to figure it out. Now, maybe it doesn't end up that way, but if I was a betting man, I'd put money on him going back.
Okay, now where does Andre Johnson go?
Now you got to ask yourself. You can see him in New England, absolutely.
No.
You got to ask yourself, what does he have left in the tank?
They're going to cut him, and I think he's the number two receiver now. He's not down to a three yet. He's still got some speed and great hands, and he's big. He's bigger than Reggie, so he can fight off one-on-one coverage a little bit easier. You know what I mean?
Those Miami wide receivers at the end of their careers. Oh,
you
my God. We just had Ed Reed. Well, think about it. Think about the Hall of Famers. We just had Ed Reed retire. The year before that, we had Ray Lewis retire. And now Reggie Wayne. And if Andre Johnson plays 2-3 more years, he'll be a Hall of Famer, too. There might be 4 Hall of Famers right there.
You know what?
To you.
They all deserve it. I mean, you can't, you know, that's, to me, Reggie Wayne and Andre Johnson are no-brainer Hall of Famers. I want to ask you this. This is an opportunity where, you know, in free agency, guys cash in and get, you know, the big, you know, lead free agents. So Sue at tackle, you know, maybe some of the safeties, you know, Roll or, you know, McCourty is going to cash in. Revis might get back out there if they don't reach a deal by Tuesday. Byron Maxwell, the corner from Seattle. So if Seattle signs Kerry Williams, that lets you know they don't have the money to pay Maxwell, and they probably don't. So getting Kerry Williams would be pretty good from Philly. Where does Maxwell go? Does Chip Kelly go for him? Or do you see the Jets saying, you know, we're going to jump in, or do they just bring Cromartie over because Todd Bowles, you know, had him with the Cardinals? What are your thoughts on those corners?
Well, I think that corners are getting expensive because, you know, your money goes to quarterback, tackles, defensive ends, and corners now. So
Top four.
I don't know. Maxwell, the problem with Maxwell is that
he's great.
He's really good, and he stepped in for Browner no problem, right? I thought that when Browner left that defense or that secondary would take a hit, no problem. Maxwell stepped
in. And,
Ray, he
can play the slot receivers and outside.
I know, and so that's why, because of his value, it's limiting where he can go. I mean, this guy is in the almost elite cornerback category, right? So he's looking at, what, $7-8 million a year. So I got to think, right? So this guy, the number of people that can slot him in, well, the salary cap did go up. But
yeah.
I don't know. I like him at the Jets, to be honest with you. I don't know that they want to put that much money into one corner. But you know what? Cornerback position for the Jets has been a weakness for a while. And
well, maybe
they
go cheaper with Marty because he's a little older, but he could give you still a good 2 years. If the Jets – see, this is the thing. The Jets need more than one corner because Milner has been hurt and never developed, and they need a quarterback. So unless, you know, to me, you know, if the Jets say, hey, I want to, you know, get Cromartie, you know, give him, you know, some two-year deal, you know, $12 million, and then either draft a guy in the first or second round. I mean, at six, there's no corners this year. You're going to take that high. I mean, the question is, you know, is there somebody to trade for, or do they sign two corners in free agency? I don't know. But either way, Jets fans have got to be a little bit happier today because, to me, it's not like when you brought in LaDainian or Brett Favre. Brandon Marshall, even though he's older, remember like CeCe, the legendary Chris Carter, who, as he got older, was still so viable because not just great hands, good size, like Fitzgerald, good size, but knows how to run the route tree and just savvy to get open. And I think Brandon Marshall, his radius, as they always talk about, is like Randy Moss. It's so ridiculous. He can go up and get anything. And I actually think the Bears, they jumped the gun because Jeffrey and the kid Wilson, neither one of them could stay healthy. Not that Marshall did either this year. But those guys are not ready to be a number one. Alshon Jeffrey's closer, but the kid Wilson is not proven. And to me, Brandon Marshall, I think in the Jets, now Decker at the two, Curley the three, maybe Jace Amaro develops a tight end. I don't know. I like the way the Jets are going, but you do need a quarterback.
Right, but they filled in all the other pieces that were able to be filled in. And like you said, I think Amaro's going to turn out to be a nice pass-catching tight end. I think he'll be fine. And that running back by committee situation works well for the Jets. They don't have a star at running back, but they have enough backs that can move the chains. It's that quarterback, though, but how do you get that? What's your solution? I mean, they're picking number six, so that helps. But even if you were to get your boy Marcus Mariota, he's not ready. He's about 2 years away from being ready to me. Hasn't taken any snaps under center in any material way in college. So this guy is at least a year away, if not two.
He's only ready if he goes to Chip Kelly. And the question is, as a Jet fan, would you be happy with Nick Foles?
I would. I'd love Nick Foles. Big, strong guy. One of your boys, Arizona State, had a great season two seasons ago.
Arizona guy.
Arizona, sorry.
Yeah.
I love Nick Foles, man. Do it.
You're a little higher on Nick Foles than I am, but I definitely, you know, I respect him. I think he's solid. Two questions, though. You know, when we sort of wake up Wednesday morning or wake up Tuesday afternoon from whatever, where does Sue go? Is he a Jaguar, a Dolphin, a Raider, or a surprise team? Where do you see Sue landing?
Well, the issue with Sue is he's going to break the bank, like you keep saying.
Over $100 million. And maybe
in order to do that, you need a team with a ton of cap room.
Yeah.
Right? So
that's
those
three. Jaguars.
His opportunities are limited. Of those three, I think the Jaguars are pushing the hardest, but Miami might be the best fit, quality of life, you know, team that's decent.
Yeah.
AFC, you got to figure, you know, Buffalo and the Bills are arming up, and New England can only go down, right? They're only getting older. Brady's eventually going to retire. So,
yeah. No, that's a good spot. And they've got talent around them. And they have a quarterback. Whatever you want to say, Tannehill is developing, and I believe he's got a bright future. But, Ray, you got to get him some receivers. You just got Mike Wallace. Hartline and Gibson are gone. You know, I think, like I said in my mock, I got Jalen Strong going there at 14. They got to get a receiver, but you got to believe they have to sign somebody. That first day, if they get Sue, right after Sue, they need to sign, I don't know, give me a receiver that's out there, like some sort of veteran. You know, where does Macklin go? When you talk about receivers, Cobb and Macklin, who makes a play for Randall Cobb and Jeremy Macklin? Or do they return back to their respective teams?
The Miami Dolphins. I think that Cobb might go back. I think Macklin's gone. I think he's out of there. I think he wants to break out and kind of spread his wings.
Did you see him going to Kansas City with Andy Reid?
Possibly, quite possibly. I'm always worried about a guy that's got two-time knee injury. But Macklin, when he's healthy, can do, you know, remember how dominant he was in college, returning punts, catching balls. He was, you know, great at University of Missouri. He had a few, I wouldn't say he even had some great years in Philly because he hasn't stayed healthy, but he's had stretches.
He was good this season. Pretty good season this year.
A good season. But he's had stretches of five, six, seven games where he's played great. So, to me, Jeremy Macklin is a – be very wary of Jeremy Macklin if you're a GM. But if you can stash him away in a wide receiver core that's full of other talented wide receivers, that would be the move. But if you have to rely on him to be your 1 or your 1A, be careful because he's
very
prone.
Let me throw out a curveball or an oddball. Forget the Chiefs because they're about to cut Dwayne Bowe because he's got a crazy cap hit this year, and he's not worth it, I think, a $12, $14 million cap hit. So the Chiefs really have nothing. So maybe Macklin doesn't go to Andy Reid. What if Macklin went to go play with Derek Carr and the Raiders, who have James Jones, or if Macklin went to go team up with Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton? Wow.
That's perfect. Because T.Y. Hilton, even though he drops a lot of balls, is stepping up
T.Y.
to be – No, I do too, but you know he's almost got the Terrell Owens syndrome where he's so good, so awesome, and developing into that number one receiver, but doesn't have elite hands. Like he doesn't have, you know, Randy Moss or even Andre Johnson or those kind of hands. He's not elite with his hand. Drops too many balls, but I think he can work on it. And Macklin, that would be a nice situation because they have two pass-catching tight ends. They've got T.Y. Hilton and Jeremy Macklin. That's the perfect situation for him. I could see him going potentially to Green Bay, right? If they lose Cobb, team up with Jordy Nelson and Andrew Quarles. He's got a lot of opportunity, Macklin, especially if he doesn't want to be – if he doesn't insist on being a number one receiver. Oakland is another viable solution. I mean, they need receivers, and it looks like this kid Derek Carr might be the real deal.
I like Carr.
And frankly,
yeah.
I wouldn't mind playing in Miami with Tannehill, too. I think he's got an upside. He's got a future. He's got a big arm. There's places. If you're a wide receiver, you've got some places because ultimately the most important thing for you as a wide receiver is can my quarterback get me the ball? And there's about, I would say, 6 or 7 Pro Bowl or borderline Pro Bowl quarterbacks out there that need receivers.
So before we leave this and hop to college hoops, you know, I got to ask you two things. Number one, good news for Seahawks fans. Beast Mode's coming back, gets $11 million.
Does
Seattle, do they go and attack and try to get Jordan Cameron or Julius Thomas in free agency? There's a lot of rumors that they're looking for a tight end, which would be great for Russell Wilson, and I think he's going to try to give them a quarterback, you know, friendly deal. What are your thoughts about that? And then where does Frank Gore go? Because I think he still can tote the rock.
He can, and so I don't know where Frank Gore goes, but it's a one-year type of solution. It's year by year, right? So you got to go to a team that needs you this year. So is that New England? Is that Denver? Is that New Orleans? Can you be in the rotation in Green Bay? I would imagine he wants to play. Think about if Frank Gore went with the enemy. And went to Seattle.
Too.
Think about if he went to Seattle and they did a two-back system. I mean, he might not because they might be too similar, Marshawn Lynch. But just think about that for a second. Now, when it comes to the other question about Russell Wilson and Seattle, they've obviously committed to not committing, right? They've committed to not committing to wide receivers. They let Percy Harvin go. They let Golden Tate go. They're fine with Kirsten and the wide receiving crew that they have, which is not that great. So to me, they have determined that they don't need outstanding wide receivers. And I think that's a philosophical model, right? They wouldn't go for a Dez Bryant. They wouldn't go for one of these big-time, you know, borderline prima donna wide receivers.
What? A lot of the Super Bowl-winning teams have not had, like, a number one receiver as of late. The Patriots haven't. Almost as funny as, you know, the last team to win the Super Bowl.
The Ravens have it, sure.
The last team, and even for the stud running back, when you talk about Shady McCoy, and I was going to say this earlier, the last team to lead the league was the 85 Bears in rushing with Walter Payton. So you kind of almost want to be in that middle where you have a good, good defense, you know, you can pass and you can run when needed. You got to be a little bit balanced.
I think Seattle is good enough with Russell Wilson, or they think anyway, that they're good enough with Russell Wilson keeping the defense keeps the game close. Russell Wilson wins you the game in the fourth quarter, and they just want tough guys who can move the chains and make a play here and there. So that doesn't lend itself well to an $8 to $10 million prima donna receiver, but it does lend itself to a tight end. And depending on how much Julius Thomas wants, I think he might want too much. But Jordan Cameron might be able – you might be able to get him because of his down year, which is basically injury-driven, 2 years ago. And, you know, I drafted him on all my fantasy teams, so I'm upset at him. But he's nice. And I think that because he had a bad year last year –
I like the kid they have, though. You don't like Luke Wilson? I like Luke Wilson over Zach Miller. So if they
he's
give it a
all
Zach
right, but I like my man.
Yeah,
I like
you know
my
Jordan
man.
Cameron. Okay.
Yeah, Jordan
anyway,
Cameron. I think he's nice.
We gotta wrap it up with the NFL and get the college hoops. But the blind side, Michael Orr has agreed to a deal with the Panthers. So I thought that would warm your heart. He's working on a new movie. That's great.
Good for him.
Yeah, 2-year deal. That is good. So listen, it was sort of a weird day. We've got a great weekend in college basketball. Some of the smaller leagues have started their conference tournaments. We've got Duke, North Carolina. We got Virginia, Louisville. Virginia's waiting to see if their guard, Anderson, will be back for the tournament. But we've got Syracuse. Break down for everybody what they did to the Cuse, Jim Boeheim, and the sanctions, the NCAA.
So apparently for the past 10 years, Syracuse self-reported. But apparently for the past 10 years, Syracuse has been in violation of one NCAA rule or another. Now, I would argue that probably every other major program has too, but let's just focus on Syracuse right now. So they self-reported, they pulled themselves out of the tournament this year, and the NCAA came down with a ban as follows. They took 3 scholarships a year for the next 4 years from Syracuse, so that's 12 scholarship players. They took 108 wins away from Jim Boeheim, moving him from second to sixth all-time.
That's the biggest hit.
That's the biggest hit. And they suspended Jim Boeheim 9 ACC games, which I'm glad it was the ACC games because you know how Syracuse schedules those cupcakes in the beginning of the year. Their first 9 games, they're playing – they're going to the, you know, the Scottsdale Y, you know. They're going to the Boys and Girls Club. So these ACC games mean a lot.
Oh, yes, they do.
So at the end of the day, I think that it was somewhere between the death penalty and a slap on the wrist. So it wasn't quite terrible, but I don't think they went far enough, frankly. If you've been doing
it
for 10 years.
It wasn't a big thing, right? It wasn't no tournament game next year. And I think they'll still get the big recruit they want. There's some kid with Thomas Bryant or somebody, you know, so they'll probably still be able to get their, you know, McDonald's All-American. And let's be honest, look, Syracuse is such a machine. And all of these coaches in college basketball coaches have got it pretty easy, right? College football, there's like spring season. But college basketball, you play 2 games a week. You might practice 2-3 times. You know, the recruiting season is not year round, and your coaches run a couple of camps. You might come in and say hello, take a picture. You go to a couple of AAU events, you know, and then you're recruiting, you know, through the internet on the phone. I don't know. It's it's gotten so high powered now that Arizona, Sean Miller, he doesn't have to recruit. It's Arizona and Sean Miller. Mike Krzyzewski, he doesn't have to recruit. Everybody wants to go to Duke. You know,
well,
same thing with
So that's a great point, though. So now this will be very interesting to see, is Syracuse in that class of Arizona, Duke, North Carolina, where the program recruits itself? Jim Boeheim historically was a great recruiter. He doesn't really have a home base. He's more of a nationwide recruiter. But the question is, does a team like Syracuse on probation with three fewer scholarships and just the stigma of being on probation, does that hurt you? I would argue that if this was Duke, Carolina, Arizona, this wouldn't hurt them as much. But Syracuse, I don't know. They might get hurt from this. They might have a down 3-4
That's
years, maybe
point.
5 years.
But I'll say this. That's a great point, Ray. But I'll say this. It would hurt more if they were in the Big East now as it's constituted compared to being in the super juggernaut of the ACC. I think it hurts a little less. I do. I think it hurts a little less. So let's talk about on the court. Let's talk about this year on the court. We got some good games this weekend. You know, Kansas are saying watch out against Oklahoma. They already won the conference title and at 13-4, but they do play at Oklahoma. No Perry Ellis. So I smell, you know, a lost bear, which would be good for Oklahoma. This weekend, can the Tar Heels get the revenge and beat Duke? What are you thinking?
Ooh, they played
them
very, very well and should have won that game.
Yeah.
That late game execution was terrible. So I
Duke,
do think
this Duke team could go to the Final Four or lose in like the second round, Ray. They really
I
can.
Think, you know, it's funny because I think that those are the new Krzyzewski teams. You know, they shoot a lot. They have a couple of one and dones now, and this team could do, you know, the Austin Rivers and not even make it out of the first round, his team, or they could go win a title. But this particular game, I actually think Carolina's going to win. I think Carolina's going to say, look, we need to get rolling for the ACC tournament. We should have beat Duke and Cameron. If it weren't for bad execution, a few missed free throws, a couple of late-game turnovers, we killed them in the paint. I think in the paint, if I remember correctly, the stats were like 55-30 or something like that.
Yeah,
and if we don't have to get in foul trouble, and if we don't get in foul trouble, we can really – so they just have Jahlil Okafor, and we go 3 or 4 deep, right? And if we can find a way – now, Jahlil Okafor turned his ankle in that game, but – if we can find a way to have all these guys, Johnson and Meeks and everybody, just give Okafor trouble. Make him shoot 50% or less from the field. We dominate in the paint, and Marcus Page doesn't get shut down like he did last game. I think Carolina has a very good chance of winning the game.
You know, this is funny because when I see Duke, and they're probably going to be a 1 or 2 seed, and that second round and that 7-10 matchup, if they're a 2 seed and they wind up playing like a VCU or Dayton, they might go down. But I'm just throwing it out there. You know, it might be a little prophecy. Who knows? Look, two great games this weekend that people might not be talking about. Providence-Butler, I'm watching that. That's going to be a great game. And Ohio State-Wisconsin. Does Wisconsin go to Ohio State and solidify a number one seed, you know, by putting a stamp on their Big Ten season and then maybe going through the tournament? They need this win, I think, to get a number one seed. If they lose at Ohio State, to me, Wisconsin will surely be a 2 because they're competing against the Duke, Virginia loser, Villanova, and Arizona to get one of those number one seeds.
Right. I would agree. I think they have to run the table and – I think Wisconsin wins are just a better team. But can we talk a little bit about Phil doing his little recruiting? Now, what was that all about, Phil? Come on, you know better than that.
I can't talk about it, but listen, everybody's been ripping him. At least he's been on ESPN at the games.
Well, that's true, because everybody at first was saying
he doesn't want to roll
that
up
he's not doing anything, that he's checked out. And now he's commenting, although this kid, D'Angelo Russell, is nice.
He's wrong about Russell. He said he's a fine kid and would be great on any team, right? What else? What are you supposed to say?
You're supposed to say nothing because that's against the rules. But you're right, though. It was asinine. I mean, to get fined for that, to say an undisclosed amount. It's probably a large amount. But to get fined for saying basically this guy is a good player and he'd be a nice addition, you know, to an NBA team, I mean, okay, that's nice.
Hey, this one is a SEC battle to warm your heart, and this might be the game to get them in a tournament. LSU has to, Ray, to make the tournament, at least in my eyes. They have to beat Arkansas this weekend and win at least two games, maybe three games in the SEC tournament against Arkansas. You know, Arkansas is 18 overall. They'll be, you know, probably top 5-6 seed. But LSU is right there on that bubble, and they got to win this weekend. And our Johnnies, you know, great time talking with Zendon Hamilton. And our St. John's Red Storm, they've got to finish out strong. Can they make the tournament, Ray?
I think so. I think this is the year St. John's makes the tournament. I think they come in, they get themselves a nice, you know, I don't know what it would be, a 10 seed, maybe a 9-10 seed, something like that. And the program is back. Hopefully Steve Lavin is healthy and Steve Lavin can control his team, get a little controlled athleticism out there. And yeah, I'm looking for St. John's to do their thing. Now, as for you, LSU, man, 21-9, right on.
Yeah, right there. It's a big game. They got to beat Arkansas. It's a very big game. And you know what? We can't leave college basketball without talking about my Terps, because Mark Turgeon, I got to applaud him. Good job, sir. You know, some good recruiting between Wells and Lehman and Melo Trimble. Melo Trimble is one of the best freshmen in the country, maybe a little underrated. Great point guard. We're 25-5. We're going to Nebraska, you know, wind up being 14-4 your first year in the Big Ten. That's pretty impressive, Ray. And I'm gonna go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that Maryland might leapfrog Kansas and wind up getting
You almost said it.
Okay, this is it, right? Wichita State has not played the great out-of-conference schedule, so maybe they drop down. Who knows what happens to Gonzaga if they lose another game in their tournament. If Maryland ever upsets Wisconsin, let's say in the Big Ten championship, Maryland will move up to a 2 seed. If not, they're a solid 3. Is that fair?
I like that. I think that's fair. Can I ask if Des Wells has a little Bonzi Wells in him, and
is
maybe as a senior?
Oh my goodness! Listen, I was talking. Ray and Tay was talking on Twitter with Big Tigger and Sean Merriman, Mr. Lights Out, and Scott Van Pelt from SVP and Rasulo. Everybody was going crazy about the Terps and Des Wells getting busy. Ray, he's impressive.
Yeah, and you know what? In this age of one and dones, I love me some seniors.
Besides the freshman point guard, they're going to be dangerous in the tournament. Got a couple seniors on the roster. So, you know, look, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Give me one. I guess if we looked at right now, you know, it's closing up. Do you, like, Villanova? You know, obviously St. John's plays Villanova. If St. John's beats Villanova, Villanova to me is definitely not a 1 seed. I know Joe Lombardi and everybody's hyping up Villanova at 28-2. One, I think the Johnnies can beat Villanova, so they won't be 16-2 in conference. They'll be 15-2 or whatever, and this would definitely put St. John's in. But I think even a good showing against Villanova will get them, you know, off any bubble. But I don't know. I'm really excited about it. Look, we're just a week away, right?
I think St. John's is got themselves. Right now, you would think they're a 7 or 8 seed, maybe. The problem is they'll probably lose to Villanova, so that'll set them back. So they probably have to win a few games in the Big East tournament. But they should be in. The real question, like you said, is Villanova, how strong is that 27-2? You know, I don't have their numbers, or the RPI and the BPI and all that stuff, but just looking at them and looking at what they've had to – who they've had to
they're
play,
not
who they've had to
speed.
They're not really a one. If
and
you
they
look
have
deep,
trouble scoring. Let's be fair.
In your heart.
You
got to think Arizona's better than them, Wisconsin's better than them, even Gonzaga's better than they are.
Both of them.
To me, they could be, you know, they could mess around if they lose early or if they were to lose to St. John's, they could mess around and be, you know, I don't know if they'll be a 3 seed, but they might be the last 2 seed, right? So, so it's going
and
for
have to
one.
Play Kentucky, right? Think of it like that, that last 2 seed. Mess around, and even if you go far in that Elite Eight, you play Kentucky to go to the Final Four. That's no fun. So it'll be interesting to say. It'll definitely be interesting to play out. So let's talk about last night. We'll talk about the NBA. Two good games last night, a sad story and a great story. Let's start with the good stuff. Russell Westbrook has put the whole NBA on league. That right now he's in a video game, and he's got like 99 at all of the stats, and nobody can stop him. And I just want people to just – don't you feel like sort of people don't stop in the moment and smell the roses in life? But it's the same thing in the sports world. What this cat is doing, forget the fact that he didn't get a triple-double last night. And yes, his team lost. So, you know, they've been, you know, with all these triple-doubles, they've been like, what, 1-3 or whatever in their last 4 or 5 games, you know, 2-4 or 2-6 or whatever they've been doing without Durant. And by the way, I told you earlier in the season about Durant and that foot, and I was concerned. And it's coming back to bite him. I'm really still worried about OKC.
You're a doctor too. You go to preseason basketball. You're a Vegas reporter. You analyze. You got the doctor.
You got an MD.
You got an MD hidden in there.
I'm a 5'11", 44-year-old with the big feet, and my feet hurt. So I know if those feet are hurting, and you're 6'11", and you're pounding up and down the court. Look, we could go down the list, Ray, and I know you know them by heart of all the guys' careers that their feet destroyed them. And I hope that they don't rush him back. Remember, they said it would be a week. It's already been over 2 weeks. Don't rush him back. You're still, what, a half a game up over the Pelicans. And, oh, by the way, Anthony Davis, first game
Anthony
back.
Davis is back, yes.
What was it?
Second best player in the
13,
NBA right now. Or maybe
13,
third if you put Russell Westbrook in there.
Oh, Ray, did you see that game? His first game back. But the good news, though, is that can we just applaud Etuan Moore for a minute and Mirotic, 26 points? But Etuan Moore from Purdue, you know, the 15th man on the Bulls roster, but with all the injuries, he's playing. And good for him, man. 19 points, great game. And without D. Rose, he's going to play a lot. That was a great story. I know you got to be happy for Etuan. That was a big shot.
You know, I was happy for him. I thought he was a decent player in college. He seemed like he had his head on right. He had a nice little career at Purdue, and that was awesome. That was awesome. But you know what? You know where my heart is? My heart goes out to Wesley Matthews.
I know,
because,
man.
You know, I did that. I ruptured my Achilles.
It's
and Devin. That was the one that might have playoff implications. That
you,
might.
I don't want to say.
I mean, Aaron Aflalo is a great pickup now,
no,
especially
no,
in retrospect.
Is. But that means they have no bench now again. That's what that means.
And
because
Aaron Aflalo is not shooting as well, and Nick Batum is not that great a shooter,
what do you
do?
Do you sign Nate Robinson? Is there anybody out there on the market that you can sign? What, they got to do something.
I don't know that Nate Robinson is their temperament. You know what I mean? They're more of a controlled, slashing, you know, type of team. I don't know that Nate would get along there. I don't know. I think they just grit and bear it and try to win in spite of that and just go shorter on the rotation, thinking that Aaron Aflalo steps in. He's a good defender. You know, he's not quite as dynamic, and he's not the shooter Wesley Matthews is, but you know what?
Can I tell you something? What's going to happen in the Western Conference, Ray? It's coming down to health. And the team that's the healthiest might be the team that survives in that wild, wild West. Because go ahead.
I was going to say what teams might do, not to cut you off real quick, but I'll let you finish in a second, but people might start to do what Popovich has been doing all year. Which is to say, you know what? For the last decade, forget about my playoff seed. I just want to keep my players healthy.
Right, right. But I'm saying with the injuries that are already there, right? I mean, with what has happened, it's, you know, the only team that I think is truly you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the next 20 games or whatever's left, 22 games, 23, whatever. But right now, it seems like Dallas and Memphis are the healthiest teams. Now, granted, if Dwight Howard comes back and then can get healthy and Durant gets healthy and they have no other injuries and the Warriors guys stay okay between Lee and Bogut, you know, but I think, honestly, that's a big shot for Portland. I don't think they can win. Now, Blake's got to come back, but the Clippers have got – I mean, think of all the teams, the Spurs, Parker. I think they're hitting a wall. I think, you know, getting to the finals 2 years in a row for that age, and Kawhi has not been the Kawhi that Ray thought he would be in the beginning of the season. I think the Spurs – I don't want to pronounce that they're done on, you know, March 6th or whatever today is, March 6th. But, Ray, the West is going to be about who – can get the healthiest, because every series is a war.
Yeah, and I don't know what you do. I mean, you're in that dilemma where you say to yourself, you know what, the difference between a 4 seed and a 5 seed is hosting that first round playoff, and the difference between a 2 and a 3 seed, you know, is a potential matchup. But at the same time, the All-Star break came late, right? We said the All-Star break was like at 53, 55 games for some teams. And people are getting hurt and people are injured, and keeping them healthy is priority number one. I mean, once you've pretty much clinched the tournament, you know, do you then just keep your guys healthy? So this will be really, really interesting, especially in that West, because you got to figure that the team that comes out of the West is probably going to pay 3 6- or 7- game series, and they're going to be just exhausted when it comes to the finals.
And then the Cleveland Atlanta Bulls winner is going to really have they'll be able to steal game one without question in the finals against the West, unless there's some serious rest. But I tell you, the West might do itself a disservice, because whoever makes it to the finals, they're going to have to be exhausted. They really are. I mean, I know in NBA playoffs, they stretch it out so much, but they stretch out the first round more than they do second and third rounds. And it's going to be rough for whoever makes that way. I still like the Grizzlies, just because even though a lot of these teams have trouble scoring, like you always say, the playoffs, there is less scoring. You're allowed to be a little bit more physical. And I think all that favors the Grizzlies. And I think Jeff Green and the fact that Gasol can hit jump shots, I think they've got enough scoring. If Vince Carter can get healthy, it's going to be fascinating to see what damage Memphis can do this year. And I wouldn't count out Dallas. I know the other day when I asked you about it, you weren't too high on them. But the reason why I say Dallas is because they can shoot. And Chandler can block whatever shots, you know, he needs to block. And even though Rondo, it's been ugly, I think he's a playoff player. Does that make sense, you know?
Yeah, I will say this for Dallas, that they have on paper all the pieces, right? They've got the rebounding in Chandler, and they've got the go-to guy in Dirk and Monte Ellis. They've got the point guard in Rajon Rondo. Three of those five starters have a title, right? So these guys have all the elements that you need on paper. Now it's just a matter of, can they win 4 series? I don't know that they can, but on paper, except for the fact that Dirk's not as explosive as he was 3 years ago when they won the title, these guys are, I mean, this is a championship team, and you add some of the pieces that they have, Chandler Parsons and a Rajon Rondo. I mean, this team
Amari
on paper.
I like
to do some
Amari
things. Amari Stoudemire, who I'm not even counting. I don't even know how healthy he'll be, 20 games from now. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But you know what? If you're a Dallas fan, you think to yourself, why not? I mean, why not? Especially as everybody in the West keeps getting hurt.
Yeah, it's listen, this is one of those years where you really – I don't know. I'll be interested tonight to see Cleveland against Atlanta. I feel like this is one of those games. Now, look, last weekend, Cleveland took care of Golden State and then lost to Houston. But, you know, you really want to see Cleveland battle the Hawks. That's going to be interesting to me because as much as we all think that Atlanta, because they don't have a go-to player and a star, that they can't do this or can't do that, you know, tonight might be a night where they show that, you know what, we can do some things. And our go-to guys or our players, you know, they can, Horford and Teague and Millsap, they can get you some clutch baskets and playing the Spurs way. Because think about it. I forgot who made this point. Somebody, maybe Broussard or somebody. But a good point is that even the Spurs, their big three, none of them were, you know, at the age that they are now, none of them last year were playing at a LeBron or a Hall of Fame level. It was really a whole team that attacked them. Do you know what I mean?
True. And
the shooting.
No, that's
so
very true.
You got to consider that. So it should be fun. I think that's a game that I'll have to, you know, turn on the tube. You know, that
the
NBA
telly?
Pass.
Telly? You got to turn on the telly.
Got to turn on the telly. So look, this is a good time of year. We got daylight savings coming. So we'll figure out when we'll be back on Monday and talk to you, you know, about what's going on. March Madness, the NBA, NFL free agency. But we got some baseball to talk. And going into this season, there's a lot of fascinating things. I wanted to ask you if you know, when you look at the NBA, they've got so many players that are Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers, and, you know, these records that Westbrook and Jordan, you know, LeBron, you know, these records that these guys are getting. But when you look at baseball, it's kind of weird in the sense, and good to see Matt Harvey pitch, what, 96, 97 pitches today for the Mets.
99, homie.
99.
99.
He looked good, Ray. He looked good, right?
He looked good. Supposedly, John Lester looked good for the Cubs.
Yeah.
So they've got,
you know,
some guys coming.
Look good. The other day, Darwish, Yu Darvish from the Rangers. He got a little tweak his arm a little.
Yeah, he got an MRI. Yeah, they took him for an MRI on his tricep.
Hunter Pence got hurt for the Giants.
Yeah,
see, that's
I saw
big.
That.
Let me tell you something. People don't know that Hunter Pence, he led them in home runs last year, but that's the type of loss that I think the Dodgers will get that division, and the Padres now just stepped up to possibly steal that wild card. But if I asked you, who leads the, you know, baseball right now in home runs or average? You know, I was just looking this up and give credit to our young intern. He wanted to come back with us, Adam Marchese, and he found some interesting stats. Do you know that Cabrera has got the best batting average in baseball? That one wouldn't surprise you, would you?
No, Mickey, I would say it'd be Mickey or Trout, but yeah.
Yeah, he's at like 320. But it seems like for baseball with the scarlet letter on A-Rod, he's like still one of the most decorated players. Does that hurt the game in a way? Or does it, like, just how do you view that? He's the home run leader, the hits leader, the RBI leader. You know, I mean,
by
in terms
a,
of
by a
career.
Long,
yeah.
By a long. Mile, right? So, I mean, baseball wants this guy to retire. Baseball wants him to just step aside. Problem is, he's got $61 million left. He's going nowhere. So, A-Rod is going.
First time up, he did get a hit, our guy.
Yes, Alex got the 2009 Yankees a championship.
Are you, be honest, are you, in your heart of hearts, forget sports show, forget, are you rooting for a player? Not just because he's on your favorite team. Are you rooting for a player that you know loves the game, but somehow his heart and soul and his mind got lost in trying to cheat and keep up with the Joneses and his ego and that Texas contract, if you believe he started in Texas? How do you view it, and can you cheer for him, or are you booing him? How do you personally view this?
You know what? I'm sad because here's a guy that is probably – you know, you take Miguel Cabrera, you take Mike Trout. Alex Rodriguez was these guys at 19. So
yeah.
You take a guy that may be, you know, we talked about Russell Westbrook in the NBA. You take a guy that may be the most physically talented baseball player that's ever played. because there wasn't a thing he couldn't do. I mean, he's too valuable to steal 40 bases on a regular basis, but he could have.
Yeah.
He played shortstop, which is the most demanding defensive
and
or most
honest,
important
better than
position.
Jeter. Better at shortstop than Jeter was.
Better at shortstop than Jeter. I mean, Jeter won his gold gloves, but really he wasn't. It was a borderline gold glover. Alex Rodriguez was a legitimate gold glover. He hit for power. He hit for average. He was the ultimate five-tool player. So here's a guy that had all the physical gifts. So then why did he need the substances? Because he wanted to be, instead of a star, he wanted to be a superstar. And we've seen that before with other players. But it's just sad. I can't hate on him because I don't like to hate on guys, but yeah. I can't really cheer for him either, though. I'm somewhere in the middle. I almost want him to go out and retire, and maybe leave some money on the table. I know he won't, but just retire.
No.
Also, because you're not the A-Rod that you were even 5 years ago. Putting all drugs aside, I just think
the age. Yeah,
the age. You're not the guy you were. And the problem with these long contracts is there's so much money on the table. I bet you if he didn't have $61 million left, maybe he'd play somewhere for $5 million for the love of the game, and then he'd retire. He wouldn't play 2-3 more years. So it's time for him to retire. It's just Father Time caught up to him, regardless of all the off-the-field stuff. And maybe the off-the-field stuff contributed to it, but he's just not an elite MLB player like he used to be. And so it's a little sad to see him. And it's like that with every great player at the end of their career.
Yeah, no. Listen, I'm going to turn the page. You said everything. I'll just say this, right? So home runs, 654, this is for active leaders, hits 2939, almost 3,000 hits. He'll get that very soon, probably if he makes it to the team. What is it? RBI is 1919. So on the other positive side, ERA, Clayton Kershaw, he's the face of the game, 1.38. That is the best ERA of active, you know, career ERA for pitchers. Strikeouts, your boy Vasquez. Can you believe that he's got 2,536 strikeouts?
No, that was surprising. When we saw that, when the intern, you know, cranked up some stat, I was thinking, wow.
And then your boy, this is kind of low for me. Hudson, Timmy Hudson, not – you know, Tim Lincecum, Tim Hudson, 214 wins, which is a lot, but it shows me that the game doesn't, it's almost like baseball is not, I don't want to say it's not baseball anymore, because that's weird to say, but like, you remember when, right, I guess those pitchers from the 80s and 90s were towards the end of their career, there was like a slew of guys, right, they all had well over 200 wins, and we just, It just doesn't happen anymore. So I don't think Hudson is a Hall of Famer, and I don't know if this is going to be his last season or, you know, what he's got left. You know, he reinvented himself a little bit. You see guys like Bartolo Colon, you know, staying around. But, it's just – I'm excited about this season. We're going to have our Ray and Tay Fantasy Baseball League again on Yahoo, so we'll get ready to join the guys up with that. You know, I'm looking forward to a fantasy baseball draft. It always keeps me involved in the season. You know, it's such a long season that at least doing fantasy baseball, it keeps you, you know, in the numbers. Because baseball, more than, you know, the analytics and all that stuff, football, basketball, no. It's all about baseball because baseball is a numbers game because it's always like a one-on-one battle, right?
That was the original fantasy sport right there, baseball.
It should be fascinating. If you had to guess, with the way the pitchers have been dominating the last two seasons and runs are down, will we see anybody hit 50 home runs this year?
No, I don't think so. That number
40?
Giancarlo Stanton, maybe, if he can 40? Play with that mask.
He's healthy? He's, Stanton, maybe, 41?
Yeah, maybe. Miguel Cabrera's body broke down. Mike Trout runs
the Boston
too
guys?
Much.
Anybody in Boston? I mean, you got to think of people with these. We talk about the Yankees. We talked about the Mets and give them some love. And we talked about A-Rod and Yankees, but in a negative way more so. But do we have the Yankees? Is there any way that our guy can do anything? Or I'm drawing a blank on his name. The first baseman. Does he have anything left?
Tex-Mex.
Yeah.
Mark Teixeira.
Does Teixeira have? Can he get back to 30 home runs?
So our boy Gary from the courthouse, one of our callers to the show, texted me. He said, look for a big comeback from Mark Teixeira. And I said to him, really, why would you say that? Because here's a guy that usually doesn't even get started until June.
Right.
He typically has terrible first two
April
months of the season.
Days,
So statistically, he has to play lights out from June on to even have a decent season. He always plays good defense, though. He's always a Gold Glove caliber defender. So
no,
that's
legit. His glove is legit.
To his credit. But I don't know. I mean, if the Yankees were to get 25 and 85, 90 from him, I think that would be kind of par for the course. If he gives them anything above that, if he gives them, you know, 30 home runs, 100, and also he strikes out too much. His batting average has been going down ever since the 2009 season when he came to New York. So he's basically a 245, 250 hitter. Maybe he'll give you 25, 28 homers. Maybe he'll get you 85, 90 RBI. I mean, that's the season you're getting from Teixeira. Decent and a Gold Glove first baseman.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I think New York belongs to the Mets again. And I'm not
blasphemy.
As a Yankee fan. Huh? I know I'm not
that's
I'm
blasphemy.
Not happy. I'm not happy to say that. I'm just being honest. And I think if Grandison can sort of, you know, wake up and you get something from Wright with that pitching staff, and a lot of people are saying this, and it might be smart, that they should possibly go to six starters to help Harvey out in the rotation, and because they have so many arms. So instead of him starting 32, 33 games, let him start 25, 26, and then he'll be healthier for the playoffs. Because I think the Mets, they legitimately, they're not going to take out the Nationals. That pitching staff is incredible with that Harper, you know, and that lineup. I think the Mets have a shot to fight with the Reds and Pirates and Padres for one of those two wildcard teams. I really do.
Wow, you're higher on the Mets than I am. We're going to do our baseball preview.
In
a few weeks. I don't think so. I think that they're not quite there. Maybe next year. I think the pitching staff has to come back. I think they have to be healthy. And you're typically not where you are the very next season. So I don't know if Wheeler and Harvey, obviously DeGrom is great, but they still have some proving to do, and I don't think that it happens this year. So I think the Mets are even less than a 500 team. I think they win maybe like 80 games.
Ooh, okay. If I'm going to give you four teams, if you had to pick one of them to make a wild card, Mets, Cubs, Padres, and Cleveland Indians.
Can I say none of them? But if I had to say one, I don't know. It's so hard for me to say the Padres because that team just historically has been terrible. You know,
Ray,
they went to two World Series. What was it?
The San Diego Fathers are ready to play ball. The San Diego Fathers are ready to play ball. You better get ready.
84-98 were the only two World Series appearances they made, and really, other than those two seasons, they've been terrible. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but
shout out to Tony Gwynn, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling
it
you,
it might be the Padres. Cleveland was on the verge last year, but I got to think the AL Central just got harder for them. You know, I said not the Mets, so you know what? If I had to throw a dart. Maybe the Padres. I mean, it's so hard to say that. So the Dodgers are always going to be the Dodgers, but maybe, you know, in that neighborhood, Arizona's terrible and hasn't really done anything to help their cause. So maybe the Fathers, if I had to just take a, you know,
long shot. It's going to be hard in the National League for anybody.
But maybe with Hunter Pence going down,
well, there you go.
Maybe it's an opportunity.
I was gonna say, no, it does. I really believe that, but I'll tell you this. It's all about the Dodgers, Nationals, and those St. Louis Cardinals. So, listen, we'll get back into it on Monday. NFL free agency negotiation starts Saturday, 12 o'clock. We got daylight savings. We got a great sports weekend. Let's go Tar Heels over Duke. Thanks for listening. And, hey, Like always, it was fun talking sports with you guys.
Have a great sports weekend. We'll see you on the other side. Set those clocks ahead on Sunday, on Saturday night, Sunday morning.
Yeah. Have a great sports weekend, Ray and Tay.